This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Shell. Today, we are interviewing Professor David Stokes, Emeritus Professor of Conservation Biology at the University of Washington in Bothell. So, welcome, Professor Stokes. Good to be talking with you. We're going to find out about English holly today.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So, you were featured in a recent issue of High Country News for your work in trying to control the spread of holly. But before we get to that, I understand that you started your career, I guess, studying Magellanic penguins down in Patagonia. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. That really started off as an adventure. I wasn't a zoologist at the time, but it was a chance to live and work in the wilds of Patagonia, which was pretty exciting to me. And then along the way, I just really became fascinated with the birds and the science, you know, their ecology and the science of how to conserve them. And at the time, there really wasn't much known about Magellanic penguins, one of the lesser-known species.
Uh-huh.
And that led me to do a PhD in zoology. I was looking at the habitat selection by penguins, and then later did some work looking at their foraging patterns at sea, which was also completely unknown at the time.
Uh-huh. And how did you make the transition over to study botany and English holly?
Well, that's a good question. I remained involved in the penguin research until not that long ago. But I also, I had a couple of professor jobs here in the States, and there's a lot of teaching involved. And frankly, it just didn't fit well with spending a lot of time in the field in Patagonia. And so I was looking for projects that were closer to home that I could involve students in and fit my situation better.
So what do you teach at the University of Washington?
Well, I mostly taught ecology, field ecology, conservation biology, but I've also taught courses in landscape architecture, environmental studies, and even environmental history of the Pacific Northwest. So pretty broad range there, which is maybe typical. I'm at the University of Washington's Bothell campus, which is a smaller campus.
Uh-huh.
I think we tend to teach, be less specialized in our teaching.
I saw somewhere that you're identified as teaching urban ecology. What's that about?
I've never taught a course in urban ecology, but it's certainly the case that my research now is definitely in that vein. In addition to the work on invasive plants, I've got a project looking at urban wildlife. And it's interesting. My trajectory is sort of mirrors the field of ecology generally. When I started, the idea was you go to a place as far away from humans as you can get to study the pristine natural system.
Right.
And over the decades, there's just been a much bigger realization that, you know, humans are part of this, part of the world, and there's not a place in the world we haven't affected. And so some of the most interesting research, I think, is research that specifically includes humans as part of the subject.
Uh-huh. And what got you started on English holly?
Well, I got my PhD up here in the Seattle area. And was quite familiar, and I had also worked for the Forest Service, and quite familiar with the woods around the Puget Sound. And then I left for a job in California in the late 1990s, teaching job.
Mm-hmm.
I came back to the UW in 2006, and when I came back, I started seeing holly around, English holly. I saw it in the local park, St. Edward Park, which happened to be where we did some of our research. But also when I would go out just hiking, I would occasionally see it, and I thought that was just odd. I hadn't remembered seeing it when I lived up here earlier. And it also seemed to be present in really pretty shady situations, which is kind of unusual for invasive plants, although less than we now know it's less unusual than we thought then. And so I really just wanted to know what was going on. You know, was this an active invasion? How was it proceeding? How fast could we expect it to proceed in the future? And just had a lot of questions about it. And then also I wanted a project, like I said earlier, I wanted a project I could involve students in. And this seemed like a really interesting question that could be pursued with the help of students.
So is English holly the only species of holly present in this country?
Well, there are several other holly species in North America. There's an American holly, Ilex opaca. English holly is Ilex aquifolium. And that's native to the southeastern U.S. It's not native in the Pacific Northwest. It looks like English holly, but not quite as flamboyant, I'd say. That's just my opinion, I guess. I'm not a real expert on American holly, but it's not native here. And then there's several other species that are less widespread, I think mostly in the southeastern U.S. The genus, Ilex, has somewhere between 400 and 600 species worldwide, so there's quite a few.
Holly is present all around the U.S. Is there anywhere that it's a native plant, or is it all imported from Europe or Africa?
Yeah, no. English holly is non-native everywhere in North America. It's native to Western and Central Europe, North Africa, well, and of course the British Isles. You know, that's where it gets its name. It's a native plant over there, but it's non-native everywhere in the U.S.
And as an invasive species, is it confined to certain kinds of habitats, or does it grow only up to a certain elevation?
Yeah, well, it definitely doesn't do well with freezing temperatures. So, for instance, in our area, it's a relatively low elevation plant, although I've heard informal reports from people saying that they're seeing it at higher, 2,000 feet. Maybe, I don't know how high, but not just in valley bottoms. I haven't heard that it's invasive elsewhere in the country. It seems to be quite invasive in our region, in Western Washington, Western Oregon, and in Northwestern California. And I think probably the reason for that is the climatic regime we're in, which favors evergreen plants like holly that are shade tolerant. And I think that's the key to it, the fact that it thrives here so well, in addition to being, of course, not subject to its usual predators and competitors.
All right. Is English holly what we usually see at Christmas time, what's usually for decoration?
Yeah, I think so. It's apparently American holly is also used for decorative foliage, but my understanding is that it's much less so. And so, I think it is English holly that we're seeing. And I think the figures I've heard are that somewhere between 80 and 90% of the world's commercially traded holly comes from the Pacific Northwest.
And I read in High Country News that it's found here in the Northwest Washington area, out on Vashon Island and Lake Youngs.
Yeah, it's really widespread. I mean, there's an interesting history there. In the 20s, 1920s and 30s, there was a big effort. And this is before people really thought very much about invasive species, right? Or native plant communities. And so in the 20s and 30s, there was a big effort to spread holly as far and wide in Washington as we could. And there was a woman named Lillian McEwen who started the Conservation of Wildflowers and Tree Planting Society. And she was the president. And she was really well connected. The dean of the UW School of Forestry was actually the vice president at the time. And the goal, one of the goals of this group was to make Washington the holly state. Or sometimes they said the holly state, sometimes they said the Christmas state. But the point was that they wanted to get holly growing everywhere they could. And they enlisted thousands of school kids and Girl Scouts and other young people to go out and plant seeds and starts and trees and everything all over the place. And so we had this, 10-year period of just massive inoculation of the landscape with holly before it finally, I think there was some kind of controversy. They were actually removing native plants to make space to put the holly in.
Mm.
And people began objecting to that in the 30s, and it sort of fizzled out. So we never became the holly state. But we did get a large infusion of holly starts.
So it grows around Lake Youngs, which is Seattle's watershed, right? That provides water for Seattle. Is it a problem around the lake?
I'm not sure about that. I don't know that it's a problem for water quality, but it is a problem for the condition of the forest there. And Lake Youngs is a good example of what can happen if holly is sort of given free rein. I've been out to the site, and it's really amazing. You have an overstory of Douglas fir, and then under that is an almost continuous 20 to 30 foot high thicket of holly growing in some places. That's quite impressive. I mean, it doesn't look like any forest you've seen in Washington State, any natural forest anyway.
The article also talked about a fellow who's trying to eradicate it from Vashon Island.
Yeah, I think a lot of people recognize now what an issue it is. And even if you're just a casual gardener here in the Seattle area, you'll find holly starts and you're always pulling them out. It's really widely distributed.
And you studied it at St. Edward State Park, right?
Yeah, we did it at St. Edward State Park because, A, we knew holly was there, and B, it's a really typical forest type for Washington. It was completely cleared in the late 1800s, and then it was basically left alone. So unlike a tree farm, for instance, or an industrial forest where the forest is cut and then they come in and plant a particular species, in this case, the forest was just left to undergo ecological succession in a natural way. And so it's really typical of a lot of the wildlands of western Washington, and actually in quite good shape. I mean, the forest is now roughly 130 or 140 years old. It's beginning to get old growth characteristics. And if you look at it, it looks great. It was only when you look closely that you see non-native species there, and holly's one of them. And so we picked it for its typical condition and also, if it was accessible, we could get students there to help work on the project.
Uh-huh. So isn't it grown commercially? Aren't there some nurseries that actually cultivate holly?
Well, there are a small number of holly growers.
Uh-huh.
I think they, and I'm not an expert on the holly growing industry, but my understanding is that they grow holly for export to other states and other countries for the foliage, not the plants themselves. And I believe you can buy holly at some nurseries, certainly. It's
uh-huh.
not listed as a noxious weed in the state.
Oh, yeah?
So it's certainly legal to sell it. In my neighborhood, I see it on the street. I see it out in front of in landscaping in front of people's houses, perhaps less than I used to. I think if you've ever had a holly tree near you, you get tired of it pretty quickly because you're having to pull out seedlings all the time. So I don't know whether that's why people are planting it less than they used to, but that is certainly the origin of the whole invasion is people planting it for ornamental reasons.
So does that constitute a problem for it escaping and being located elsewhere outside of where it's being cultivated?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the holly that we're finding in St. Edward Park probably came from plantings that were in the neighborhood around the park.
Uh-huh.
You can see holly right up next to the park boundary in some places, and then you'll see smaller plants in the park, presumably resulting from berries or root suckers or layering from trees that are right on the boundary. So yeah, that's the primary source probably is ornamental plantings at this point.
Well, you said that it's not a plant that is considered toxic, but it is an invasive plant. So what's its legal status, and doesn't the state have a program for removal of holly where it's not wanted?
Yeah, so first let me just stop you there. Apparently, the leaves and the berries do have some level of toxicity in them, so people shouldn't go out and eat them. Get that out there. In terms of its status in the state, it's not listed as a noxious weed. There was an attempt to list it in 2022, as a second attempt, actually. And thus far, the holly grower lobby, which is very small, there's only a handful of holly growers, but they have successfully resisted getting it designated as a noxious weed. So as of now, it's not listed as a noxious weed. Some counties, for instance, King County, classifies it as a weed of concern and that sort of thing, but it doesn't have state listing.
So how does it impact other plants and wildlife?
Well, that's interesting. I'm actually working on a paper with a former student of mine looking at its impact on understory vegetation, and our results, which are not finalized quite yet, but I can tell you it's really dramatic. I mean, it vastly reduces both the amount of understory vegetation and the diversity of understory vegetation that is underneath holly canopy, or even somewhat close to holly canopy on the north side of the tree. So that's a problem for those species, those native species that are no longer there. And if you look at a place like Lake Young, where holly is so thick and widely distributed, that can have a whole forest-wide effect. You're basically reducing the diversity of native plants over a large area. And that's a problem for those plants. It's also a problem for any other species that depend on those plants. It also creates a novel structure in the forest because we don't really have a native plant that's like holly in our forest. There is no native plant that really has the form and size and growth habits that holly has. So we don't know what that change in structure, what effect that would have. And then, one effect it could have is it could increase fire danger because holly would form ladder fuels in the lower part of the forest that could carry fire up to the crowns. And then finally, and this is somewhat speculative, but I am hearing from people with the Forest Service that they're concerned about this, which is the potential to inhibit tree regeneration. So there could be a big economic impact. I mean, it's not just shrubs that are underneath holly. It may also be preventing the trees that we like to cut for wood, like Douglas fir and that sort of thing. It could be inhibiting the reestablishment of those trees.
So you said that for humans it's toxic, and I assume for other mammals it's toxic as well, for wildlife?
No, I don't think it's... in fact, birds love it, and that's one of the ways it gets distributed. So it's not... I just didn't... when you said it wasn't toxic, I didn't want people to leave this conversation thinking, oh, I'll go out and try a few berries. I've never eaten holly.
Uh-huh.
I just have read that it's toxic. Interestingly, if yerba mate, the tea that they drink in South America, that's also from a plant in the holly genus, the Ilex genus.
Uh-huh.
Different species, though.
So tell me, let's talk more about controlling holly. How do you get rid of it if you don't want it in an area like on Vashon Island?
Yeah, well, that's a big project, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And that's one of the arguments for trying to do something now, because one thing our study found was that not only is the number of holly trees increasing rapidly, but they're still in a young phase because the invasion is fairly recent. So they're still putting on size rapidly.
Mm.
And the problem with that is that it's much harder to remove a big tree than a small tree. A small tree, you can pull up, and it's, you know, it's time consuming, but it's, you can, if you get the roots, it won't come back. Some kind of lever like a weed wrench or something like that, pretty effectively, up to maybe 2 or 3 inch diameter tree. But once you get outside that 2 or 3 inch diameter, weed wrench really can't do it. And then you're stuck with trying to kill the tree somehow. If you just cut it, a lot of trees will come back. You won't really kill the tree. Sometimes they'll die, but usually they won't. You can cut it and herbicide the stump. That's not that effective. Better than just pulling, just cutting, but not much. The best method that I know of is injecting cartridges of...
Imazapyr is what I read in the article.
What's that?
Imazapyr
is the best herbicide that I know of for doing that. And that's a great way to... And then you don't have to cut the tree down. But you have to go to every tree and do that. So it's not a trivial matter.
Well, in the article it said that he used some kind of a gun to, I guess, shoot a bullet-laden imazapyr into the tree.
Yeah, that makes it sound a little more exciting than it is. But it is this sort of like a wand with a little cartridge at the end of it that it injects the imazapyr into the...
But it spreads by suckering, is that right? So
by suckering, by layering, and by seed dispersal. So all three of those.
Layering.
Well, when branches hit the ground, they sometimes will root, and you'll get a new tree there. And that's another reason why it just becomes a very thick, almost impenetrable mass of vegetation because it's suckering and layering. And it also that's one reason why it casts such heavy shade, and we think it's largely shade that's causing impact on native vegetation.
Oh, I see. So, what's the Washington Noxious Weed Control Board? Have they considered declaring it noxious, or what's?
Well, they've considered it twice.
Yeah.
Back before 2008, 2009, 2010, sometime in there, they considered it and decided not to, apparently because of lobbying by the industry. And then most recently in 2022, they considered it, and they voted not to. Well, they had a deadlock vote, apparently, did not lift.
So there is a Holly Growers Association in the Northwest, right?
Right, and one of the people on the Noxious Weed Board is himself a holly grower.
I see. So, what are the prospects for success?
My understanding is that the Noxious Weed Board has adopted some rules of ethics, which include provisions for recusal on votes, and I'm hopeful that this question will be taken up again soon, because I think the science is clear. I don't know of any science that does not show that holly is not invasive.
Yeah.
So I think I have hope that that it will eventually get listed.
Are there other invasive plants that you work on and are concerned about?
Oh yeah. We have sort of what I consider the four invasive horsemen of the apocalypse.
Yeah.
English holly, English ivy, English laurel, get the pattern here, and Portuguese laurel. Those four species, I would say English holly is the worst of the four, but they're all pretty bad in our area.
Mm.
If you go to any forested park in the Seattle area, you'll likely see these species. And they're quite similar. They're all, except Holly's the only one that's prickly. But they're all woody evergreen plants that were introduced for horticultural reasons. And the key thing is they're really shade tolerant. And they're very able to invade closed canopy forests, which is our native plant community here. That's the new thing about this. Is, you know, you think of weeds as plants that invade disturbed areas. These plants can invade our undisturbed forests, as we've seen, certainly.
I was out on the west side of the Olympic Peninsula a couple of years ago, and Scotch broom looked like it was taking over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Scotch broom is a bad one. But the thing about Scotch broom, and I don't want to minimize its impact,
yeah,
it's a difficult thing to eradicate, but you won't find Scotch broom invading a closed forest. Right? It's going to invade places that are disturbed or open.
Yeah, along the road.
Yeah, along roads and that kind of thing. And so it's yes, it's an invasive, but it's sort of like Himalayan blackberry. It's an invasive, but it's not really much of a threat to our native forest ecosystem.
I see.
Which is the mature ecosystem that would dominate Washington State if were it not for disturbance.
Is there a program to control Scotch broom? It has to be taken out by a wrench. But
yeah, there are programs to control it. One really interesting one is down in Thurston County, where we have the remnants of the Puget Sound prairies. These were small areas that were naturally non-forested originally because of soil conditions, and then later because of Native American burning. And so the Douglas fir and other tree species didn't advance on the prairies. Well, when Euro-Americans arrived, we stopped burning, and lo and behold, the forests began to encroach, and along with them, some of the plants that Europeans brought with them, like Scotch broom, and so some of these prairies were just covered with Scotch broom, which is unfortunate because there's several species of animals and plants that are endangered. And completely reliant on these little prairies.
Yeah.
And so there's been a big effort to remove Scotch broom from that area to try to restore the prairies.
Well, David, I hate to tell you, but we've used up a half an hour, so we're out of time. I appreciate it very much. It's been very interesting.
Okay. Happy to talk again.
Hey, thanks. Our guest today has been David Stokes, Emeritus Professor of Conservation Biology at the University of Washington, Bothell. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to jswilderness.com or kgvn.org and see additional features for our website. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Schell.